baseline.
To baseline.
Very good execution of a two-on-one fast break.
Coast.
To coast.
Takes it all the way down the lane.
This.
Two-hand jam.
This is the NBA Today.
The NBA Today.
NBA Today on ESPNRadio.com's Pod Center. I'm Ryan Russillo. We're going to switch things up a little bit today. I could break down Sacramento from last night, or maybe the Lakers and Phoenix. Phoenix, another tough loss. Haven't been in many games, but we're speaking with Tim Dunaghy today, the former NBA official who has now served time for betting and conspiring to gamble on NBA games. And he joins both Scott Van Pelt and I on the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPN Radio, which I'm the co-host. We're going to play that interview for you in its entirety. If you want to also see it or watch it, you can hear it on ESPN Radio 2 p.m. Eastern Time today, or on ESPN2 at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to cut it up into two parts, but for our listeners on NBA Today, we're going to give you the entire thing. After that, I'll give you some thoughts, and then we'll get ready for a big-time Wednesday.
Tim, I want to start with some confusion, frankly, that I had that you can help clear up. The assumption I always had from the stories I'd read was that the involvement with the mob that you had was born out of being in over your head and having gotten buried, whereas the assertions from last night's interview with on 60 Minutes was that was not the case at all. It was that you're actually winning too much and you were afraid that someone was going to call on your family in Florida. Can you help clear that up for me?
Yeah, it came to fruition because I was betting with a friend on NBA games, and the success rate was very high. And we came to the conclusion that we were going to stop because we felt that what we were doing basically was wrong, and that it happened on a couple of occasions. And when we did stop, somebody that was associated with the Gambino crime family, who was having access to the information, wanted the picks to continue. So therefore, they made arrangements to come down to the Marriott Hotel and speak with me.
So based out of what, fear that they were going to call on you if the picks didn't continue, that's why they continued?
Well, the picks continued because they wanted the picks, and they had threatened to expose me for what I was doing prior, and also had made threats towards my wife and daughters in regard to somebody from New York going down to Florida to visit them.
Now, you suggest that no personal biases played into your picks, and that you didn't make calls which impacted the outcome of games that you'd bet on. As a guy that had a string of being a degenerate gambler in my past, I find that incredibly hard to believe, Tim. I mean, if I'm betting on a game and I got size action on the game and people have got my pick, and I can, if for instance it's an over and I can call fouls that slow the pace of the game and get guys to the line where they can score much more easily, I'm doing that. And you're saying that never happened?
I'm saying that I never, first of all, I never bet on an over under situation. And if I was making calls in games that were flat out wrong to facilitate a bet winning, I certainly would be throwing up red flags to be detected.
Right.
And I think your opening statement was that bias relationships were not used. I think that bias relationships were certainly used, and I think I write about that often in the book.
Tim Dunaghy is our guest. This is Scott Van Pelt Show. I'm Scott Van Pelt with Ryan Russillo.
You're talking about these biased relationships. What exactly are we looking at with the bias?
We're looking at relationships that referees had with players, referees had with coaches and owners and general managers. And we're talking about both positive and negative relationships that allowed me to put a different line on a game than that, other than what was in the newspaper.
You also mentioned NBA reports that would come down, and we hear this a lot in covering the NBA. Teams, coaches will send in videotape or now CDs of players that aren't getting foul calls, and it'll be something they'll want the league to look at. And then there'd be reports that would be sent from the NBA to the officials. What exactly did you interpret these reports to mean?
I think a good example of that would be I recall that I was in L.A. for a game one time, and there was a group supervisor in there that said that the executives in the office were pouring over a CD that the Lakers had sent in of 25 plays that they felt were missed in regard to Kobe Bryant going to the basket. And of those 25 plays, they determined that 22 fouls were missed of those 25. And in relaying that story to the referee crew, you know, I took that as that was going to travel around the staff. And basically, if Kobe Bryant went to the hole, if anyone so much as breathed on him, you know, he was going to get additional free throws. And I think that that helped me predict that, you know, Kobe was going to have a couple 40 or 50 point games, and in fact that they had a better chance of covering the spread in the game.
Another instance that's mentioned is a playoff series between Dallas and Houston. Houston's up 2-0. Dallas comes back to win that. And it, from the, what I've studied here, you imply that because Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, made such a point of illegal screens by Yao Ming, that then the officials were maybe pushed in a direction to pay closer attention to that, and that's how Dallas is able to come back. If we're talking about these personal relationships, I have a really hard time believing that of all the guys out there, of all the owners, that the NBA would try to help Mark Cuban because of a personal relationship. That one doesn't seem to add up to me. And the way it's reviewed in this report, you imply that because he made these suggestions that Dallas ends up winning that series.
I think that the suggestions that he makes traveled into the NBA office to where they reviewed the game tape, and Houston is ahead in the series 2-0. And I think what they do now is they send word down to the officials that these certain calls were missed and that Cuban was irate over the situation. And in preparing the referees for the next few games, these missed calls were pinpointed and directed to be made.
As you mentioned at the top of this interview and with 60 Minutes, you said, quote, "I try to put it out of my mind, and I think that's what I was able to do," and talking about your own personal bias in games that you'd bet on. But then later on in the same interview, you talk about the Allen Iverson instance where he had said something towards an official, was not suspended, was fined, and essentially you tell 60 Minutes that you were going to get together as a group, and you say, quote, "It was openly discussed," meaning knowing you were going to get back at Iverson, and that you knew that you and the other two officials sought out to do a little justice of our own. That's the quote. And that's a game that you won. So can you understand how that contradicts it? It just, the irony to me is amazing, because you say you have no personal bias, yet you're pointing out everyone else's personal bias. And this is a game that you bet on and won, but you want us to believe at the top that you never changed the way you officiated.
Right. I mean, I definitely had in my mind not to change the way I officiated based on the bet. And I think I can go back to the San Antonio game in which I actually told the associates to bet on San Antonio. And in fact, in the first quarter, I personally threw him out of the game. So I think that if you look at the big picture of everything, I certainly tried to do my best in not affecting any games. And the FBI did a thorough investigation and concluded that I did not make calls in games to facilitate a bet winning.
Personal Foul, the book. Tim Donaghy is our guest, a former NBA official. It's a Scott Van Pelt show on ESPN Radio. And Tim, David Stern, NBA commissioner, said all along you were a rogue official. It was you and you alone. Is that accurate?
I think that it was me and me alone in regard to betting on NBA games, but it wasn't me and me alone that enabled me to make successful and winning picks 70 to 80% of the time.
Meaning that understanding that, for instance, like in the book you point out, if Crawford's got something against somebody, if Bavetta's got something against somebody, based on understanding that, do I understand that correctly?
You know, based on relationships that existed between certain players and coaches and owners and coaches, it wasn't a situation where I bet every game that they were involved in with these teams. There was a lot of other factors that came into play. The two other referees on the floor, whether a game was a road game or a home game. But the fact is, with those relationships that existed, I was able to pick the games at 70 to 80% correct.
So, Tim, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that if there's a crime here, it's akin to insider trading, understanding something better than a layperson on the street would. But do you feel like what you did was wrong because it was insider trading, or was it wrong just because it was wrong?
Oh, no. Make no misunderstanding. It was wrong, and I certainly did something that I think should be documented that I'm not condoning. But the fact is that, it was a form of insider trading.
Tim, in the book, you describe longtime official Dick Bavetta as the, quote, go-to guy for the NBA. Does the NBA, in your opinion, or has the NBA used Bavetta to fix games and extend series?
I would say yes. I think he's put on certain games I wouldn't use the word fix, but certainly give a team a better opportunity moving forward.
You also point out the Lakers-Kings game, which has become quite infamous with the one-sided free throw attempts, but you also point out the Lakers-Blazers game, a Game 7 comeback for L.A. at home, and I think all of us that have ever watched sports realize the benefits of having the Lakers in the finals for TV and the league over teams from Sacramento or Portland, but I feel like those are examples that all conspiracy theorists have used, and when you look at the free throw discrepancy, I think it's easy to forget how those games played out, and specifically with Portland, they missed 13 straight shots in that fourth quarter, and I'm just wondering if you're pointing out something that everybody else has already pointed out to further your argument that it isn't just you and that the NBA at large is at fault.
Right. Well, you know, without looking at the tape, you know, they missed 13 shots. You said consecutive shots, but, you know, were there fouls that were let go because they missed these shots? I mean, you know, without looking at the tape, I really can't answer that question for you.
If the NBA is the larger problem, do you feel like you've been a scapegoat for the league?
You know, I don't want to have people not understand that what I did was certainly wrong.
I think we all understand that, though. I don't think anybody's gotten the impression that you haven't admitted your wrongdoing. I think the problem that I've had with it is it just seems like deflection. It seems like, yeah, I did something wrong, but look what everybody else is doing over there. And you're discrediting a league. A lot of us spend a lot of time hoping that the outcome is genuine.
Well, I think, you know, I certainly am a catalyst to fix the bigger problem that already happened. And, you know, it's a situation where there were biases in relationships that allowed me to predict the outcome of these games.
Tim, how has your life changed most noticeably as a result of what has happened since this? And by that, I mean your time being incarcerated, et cetera. Is there one specific example that you could cite?
Of how my life has changed?
Yeah, just how you've been impacted by this. Just something that, you know, I mean, just the fact you're an NBA official, which is a difficult thing to get, and that's gone as a result of this. You're in prison where I can't imagine what that is like on a day-to-day basis. So I'm just curious how your day-to-day life now has been most impacted by the decisions you made.
Well, obviously, you know, the biggest thing that's taken place is my family's been torn apart. And obviously it's tough on my kids, and it's tough on me. So I think that's the biggest problem that I face now is piecing that all back together.
What do you do? Well, how do you do that? How do you go about? Is it Humpty Dumpty broken, or is it something you can put back together?
No, I think it's certainly a situation where I know I want to be there for my children, not only financially but emotionally. And I'm working on that every day to certainly be the best father I can be.
When do you think you'll be able to sit down and watch an NBA game again?
Not sure. Not sure that I'll ever be able to sit down and watch an NBA game again.
Why do you think that is?
I think there's going to be a lot of pain there of reliving what I did and what I've lost.
Well, Tim, we appreciate your time, and I'm just the book's Personal Foul. It's out there. People can read through. They can take through your accounting of what's going on. They can make their own decisions. This is a crazy thought. Could you be a benefit to David Stern in the league if you sat down and went through all the things with him? Rather, I mean, quietly and away from the glare of the media. Could you tell him things that would help his league?
I think there's no doubt that I would be a benefit to him, and you know, unfortunately, they have not requested to speak to me other than initially after I had pled guilty. But I certainly would be, you know, interested in helping any way I can because of the poor choices that I made.
You think that'll ever happen down the road?
I wouldn't rule out anything, but I'm sure it's a possibility.
Tim, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
I watched the 60 Minutes interview with Tim Dungy last night, and one of the things that we're always guilty of, those of us that cover sports, is we always think that no one can ever do a good job on a sports topic, And they always do, you know, you get done with it and be like, oh, I can't believe you didn't ask this. Can't believe you didn't do this, this, and that. We in radio, that we change the format up a bit. Normally when we're doing a radio interview, it's 6-7 minutes tops, especially with the way the clock has been changed in the last year. So even though I think it's better overall from a listening standpoint to have shorter segments and in more of a sense of urgency, if you have a big topic to get your arms around, you can't do it in that 7 minutes. So we split that up into two. And when I watched the 60 Minutes thing last night, I didn't really feel like there was a lot left out. Because the reason we complain about it a lot is because we're right. There are so many things that we feel like non-sports people leave out. I did think the replaying of the Iverson non-call on Boozer was a joke. That was built up to be way more. That was a call that would go 50-50 in most games, and they made it out to be, hey, we told Iverson he wasn't going to be able to do anything, and we showed him, and that was an example of it. I think that was, they probably could have found better video if they wanted to. But my fundamental problem with all of this is that Tim Dunaghy is deflecting everything back towards the NBA. So instead of just saying, I did something wrong, which he said, and we told him during the interview, hey, no one's disputing that you feel bad about what you've done, but to get this book out there and to make an excuse for his behavior, perhaps, that it was this culture of the NBA where guys were just calling things based on how they felt about a player, coach, or owner. I believe that there are personal biases. I don't think any of us are naive to believe that. I've heard numerous baseball players say Greg Maddux would go out to dinner with the umps all the time on the road. I think that happens a lot in baseball. They're going to ring somebody up on a close third strike because he doesn't like the hitter. I think most of us that are reasonable people would agree that that stuff happens. In the NFL, maybe a little harder because it's a once-a-week deal. Sure, there's relationships built up over time, but is a line judge really going to jam somebody up on a spot because he hates a D coordinator? Now, maybe it has happened. I'm not saying it's impossible, but does it happen so much it ruins the credibility of the league? Does it ruin the credibility of baseball that maybe some of the veteran pitchers who generally throw strikes get the benefit of the doubt, or hitters that have a great eye get a few more pitches go their way because of their reputation? I think we all agree that this happens. But Dunaghy takes it to another level. And my answer to this all the time is, if the NBA is truly fixed, then what would it look like if the games weren't fixed? Would the Clippers play the Bucks in the finals? Is that what we're doing? I mean, if it's really fixed, why do the Knicks suck for a decade? I mean, if you really want to fix things, fix your number one market franchise, right? They're in your backyard. If it was fixed, why would the Celtics get the number 5 pick a couple years ago when they thought they were getting Oden or at least Kevin Durant, number 1 and number 2? Your most storied franchise. Yeah, we could fix this, but we won't. We'll just fix game 6 of a playoff series so we can have a game 7. We all understand that it's beneficial for the league and for TV and for everyone involved to have series go 6-7 games, more drama, more games, more revenue. But everybody hangs on to, all the conspiracy theorists hang on to that game 6 matchup of Sacramento and LA to force a game 7, and the game 7 in 2000 where it's Portland and LA. And LA's down big entering the fourth quarter. They come back. I believe at the time it was their greatest comeback in a game 7 in franchise history. And all people want to do is look at the box scores and see the discrepancy between free throw attempts. I was looking at it this morning. Portland missed 13 straight shots in that fourth quarter. Even though they shot less free throws, they normally charged with 5 more fouls, and they're out-rebounded by 14. And Shaq, who was fouled all the time back then and still would be to this day, hit 8 of his 12 free throws, I think, in the second half of the game. So it's very easy to go, well, Dunaghy said it. And that's what's so dangerous about this whole thing. And that's why I keep coming back to deflection. I mean, here's a guy who admits, or at least tries to profess, he had no personal bias even in games that he bet on. But then within 5 minutes of the interview from last night, and why I bring it up in our interview today, he says, well, yeah, we knew we were going to give it to Iverson. And the problem is now, if you're Iverson, you think like the league's been out to get you the whole time. I don't know that that's been the case. Is a guy not like him? Yeah, Steve Javy doesn't like you. Steve Javy doesn't like anyone. That's why it's called T. Javy. I think it's good this information's out there. I was happy to get to interview him today. Maybe I'm just too naive. Maybe I'm too close to it and I care too much about the NBA. But I have a hard time believing that the games I've been watching are all predetermined because the NBA wants it to be a certain way, or because Dick Bavetta really likes, I don't know, come up with an example, you know, really likes Greg Popovich. Boy, I really like Pop. So, you know, people look at that San Antonio series. And if the league was fixed, why would San Antonio get Duncan? Why would they have 4 rings in a decade? Ah, well, we feel really... feel really bad for this market, so we'll just make them better. And that's what I don't understand. If you're going to start fixing things, you just dabble a little? Is that all that happens? And I just don't believe that. So I don't believe a lot of what Tim Donaghy says. I believe that, yeah, there's some relationships that exist there, but enough to predetermine the outcome and make this game flawed to the point where there aren't real winners and losers, something that was thought of in a boardroom the day before. No, I'm not going to believe that and refuse to believe that. Your thoughts, NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com. We'll get to all your emails. We've got some great ones on who the best GM is in the NBA. We have one from Unther in Iceland that's not made up on the best shooter. So we'll do that. We'll name the best shooter, the best GM. Maybe we'll do the best of on Wednesday. Also, Tales from the Couch. Thanks for downloading. I'm Ryan Russillo, NBA Today on ESPNRadio.com's Pod Center.
Thank you for listening to the NBA Today. Download more ESPN podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or on the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.